Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Simpoga. And this evening we'll be talking about the role of the media in fighting Ebola. And with us tonight is Mr. Andrew Koroma. Andrew is an award-winning journalist and director of Sky FM in Freetown. He joins us by phone from the Sierra Leonean capital. Good afternoon, Andrew.
Yes, good afternoon, colleagues. Yeah.
How are you doing today?
Fine. You know, Africa is from war to Ebola. For Ebola is economic and politics. So you know what Africa is.
Yeah, that's right.
For now, we're just fighting hard to put an end to the Ebola epidemic.
I see.
Sub-regions of Africa.
Yes. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you.
And joining me here in the studio is my colleague, Jackson Mvunganyi. He's a host of VOA's Upfront program. Jackson, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Douglas.
You're welcome. And we'll be joined momentarily by Tiana Alpha, who is also a journalist at Sky FM. I don't know that we have her yet on phone. I think we are trying to get in touch with her, and as soon as she get in touch, she'll be joining us for the discussion. As I said, our talk tonight is the role of the media in the fight against Ebola in West African countries. Let me begin in Freetown. Before we get the main topic, Andrew, give us, our listeners, a general overview of how the situation is like now as far as Ebola is concerned.
The situation now is about putting an end to the epidemic in Sierra Leone, which has caused a lot of devastation in our economy and in a lot of slumming in Sierra Leone. Ebola, as you can see now, has even caused the postponement of some elections and a lot of suburban activities in Sierra Leone. So government, opposition parties, society, and health workers, as well as the Ebola emergency response team, are all vying now for the last countdown of Ebola so that it can be ended once for all.
At least there is some light at the end of the tunnel now that maybe the worst may be over once you go through this period when there are no cases reported.
For now, it's about getting everybody to start considering complacency so that we don't have a return. You know, we have a country where people are poor, they travel in congested, they go to market on congested days. So, yes, that is how to get the public to not to be complacent at this time of the fight.
Yeah, talking of complacency, Andrew, that's where the media comes in. Is the government putting out the message right? And what are you as media trying to do to make sure that you keep emphasizing that issue of don't be complacent, this thing may come back?
Well, that means your medicine is not the issue now. What is the issue is how people can change their behaviors. Overt behaviors, shaking hands, washing their bodies. We have a customary about people having a belief that they must wash their bodies before they are buried. So we in the media are leading the message from the health workers that we must comply with the laws of ending Ebola. That is, let us reduce the touching, let us increase the hand washing, and let us stop washing dead bodies so that the burial team can take care of all the burial until WHO declare the country Ebola free. So the media has a very, very important role. In fact, the media has a pivotal role, especially the community radio station. Mm-hmm. The independent radio network, fully engaged morning and evening, providing silent information or civic education on health issues that if the public can adhere to, Ebola will be ended pretty soon.
I see.
So it is not about more reliance on the health sector now, even though that is a key, but more on how communication is sent to the people we actually are trying to talk to so that they can not be complicated at all.
I see. Jackson, you just returned from Sierra Leone too. For you, as a person who just got in and had a few days to observe the situation,
right. What
was your takeaway?
Well, you know, it seems to me that life has really returned to normal in Freetown, and as Andrew can attest that from a lot of accounts that I heard from people, things were really rough in the past couple of months between March of last year and around June or May this year. Things were pretty rough in you know, these both countries that I visited. I was in Monrovia for 4 days, 5 days, and I was in Sierra Leone, Freetown, for about 2 days. And I met a couple of people who told me that Aluron, you know, when the crisis started, when the epidemic started, people were quite skeptical about the information that was filtering in down, you know, coming from the government, because I think historically there's a tendency among the population in both countries to be suspicious of any information that comes from the government. And, you know, Andrew, you can elaborate the history of that a little, you know, later on the show. But it was not until a politician in Liberia passed away because of Ebola that people started getting, you know, scared. Mm-hmm. People started saying, you know, if a powerful person of that stature can die, and that was, it made international news. The death of this Liberian politician made a lot of news, and that's when it started sinking into the people in Liberia that maybe this is a threat that we should be worried about. In Freetown, there were a couple of I think it was a death of according to what people tell me, and I collaborated this information with so many other people. They told me the death of two doctors. I don't remember the exact names. I believe it's Dr. Umar, if I'm not mistaken, Andrew, and another doctor who was an epidemiologist and an infectious disease doctor, who passed away. And because these are people of importance into the in their communities, people started getting scared that this was real.
I see. Andrew, first of all, I wanted to address that skepticism between information coming from the government. But further to that, address the issue of, you referred earlier on to some sort of behavioral change that requires a cultural shift, like people stopping washing dead bodies and all that. How far have that gone?
We have really come very far with confidence in the media. Like I said earlier, and this has been proven, when Ebola actually is not medicine that comes in the mind of people, it's death. So it's how you prevent dying. Those traditional practices have reduced. Not 100%, because most of the country is not being covered. We have places like in Kwenadugu where it's extremely difficult to get to some of the villages. But even at that, with my experience in the district, you could find that even though they are not getting the information directly on radio, but yes, they have health workers on the ground who are persistently telling people abide by the Ebola laws, and that has reduced. The only thing we are fighting with is we are not used to hand washing in Africa, definitely. But however, we have increased that practice, and then the culture of handshaking. I mean, this is common in Africa, especially in Sierra Leone. When you somebody, whether it's the first time or whatever time, you must shake hands. So, but with the past. Civic education, health education by the media, yes, we have improved a whole lot in reducing the risk. And as I can say now, even if there is an outbreak, we have a formidable team now, better prepared before, to contain it in wherever it is. So it is as scary as it used before, because health workers are now prepared, government is prepared, the communities themselves are prepared. So that's how far we are in terms of getting the community to stop their overt behaviors, which will help us a whole lot in meeting the countdown.
Jackson, Andrew there refers to the health workers being prepared.
Right.
There was an issue of health systems, the whole health systems in those countries. Actually, it's a continent-wide problem. Our health systems are not well prepared for these serious epidemics.
Absolutely.
From your brief observation, and again, we'll throw it back to Andrew to clarify, are they now, is there a sense that now the system can handle an epidemic of this magnitude if it came back?
You know, I think that was one of the great lessons learned in if they did not know it. I think Ebola kind of surprised them, got them unawares. They were not prepared for an epidemic of this magnitude. And for these countries are not really far off out of conflict. You know, they're still considered what they're considered fragile states. And they have not really built a robust healthcare system even to cater to other smaller crises, health crises. Later on, you know, having to tackle Ebola, an epidemic that just came out of nowhere and just decimated, you know, populations. I believe that with the help of the international community, they're working on it. I spoke to the spokesman. In Liberia, I spoke to the deputy health minister, who said that they're putting a lot of money into the healthcare system. They're putting money in training healthcare workers, giving them the necessary tools. They're even reaching out to traditional healthcare workers who play a very critical role in these communities. Traditional health healers
although there was some controversy about them.
Absolutely, but in many ways, many people used to go to them. They're the primary contact for some people in these villages. If they have an ailment, they don't understand, they'll go to a traditional healer. And so government has actually reached out to them, and they're trying to work with them in Sierra Leone to alert them to this situation. If you have somebody who is sick, they have a toll-free line, which is, I think, 117, and they're encouraging them to call. If you come into contact or somebody comes to you exhibiting symptoms of Ebola, call us. Do not take the matters into your own hands. Obviously, it's something that is filtered down to many traditional healers, because we don't hear as many cases anymore of people, you know, dying at the hands of traditional healers. But there's a lot that needs to be done in many in these countries to fix the healthcare system as other systems, because the healthcare system does not work independently. You know, there are many other systems that, you know, should work in tandem, and I believe the most important one is that there has to be leadership from the top that, you know, understands how critical healthcare is to a country.
Andrew, anything you want to add on that as far as the government's preparedness and health workers being prepared for any eventualities concerned? Has there now, is it different now than it was a year to 2 years ago?
Yes, impressively, when you go through, we actually handle this stuff militarily.
Militarily, how?
I don't know whether we still have him online. Just to clarify, is that the response came mostly. And I think I had a conversation with him when I was in Freetown. I had a conversation with Andrew. They had, for example, in Liberia, they had the army enforcing the quarantine. Okay, yeah, they had the army enforcing quarantine in some neighborhoods like West Point, which was put under like heavy military siege for I think 7 to 14 days, when nobody was allowed to get out. And so I believe that's what Andrew was alluding to, but we'll probably get him on the line to clarify
of that. Yeah, and I think it's as good a point maybe to take a short break, and when we come back, we shall continue our discussion of the role of the media in fighting Ebola. We'll be right back after this very brief break. Please don't go away. We shall be back to continue our discussion of this important issue. Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the role of the media in fighting Ebola. Our panelists are my colleague, Jackson Mvunganyi, VOA's host of Upfront Program, Andrew Koroma of Sky FM, and we're expected to have also Tiana Alpha of the same station, but we had problems reaching her by phone. And I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Andrew, you're there, I believe, now.
Yeah, good evening.
Yes. Now, let's move on to the... As most people, our listeners know that Ebola epidemic had a very serious impact on the communities there. Now, let's address the issue of widows and orphans. Is there any government program intervention that to help these people who are left maybe hard hit by the epidemic?
Yes. That has really been beefed up. A lot of support from the international community and government are going to Ebola survivors, and not only Ebola survivors, but their communities, the communities in which they live, the health centers in which they live. We also have a lot of attention being given to Ebola orphans. We have a whole ministry of gender and children affairs focus on that. And as even today, NGOs are as well providing support to those who survived Ebola in the rural areas. Certainly in both, World Vision are leading the way in providing support to those people. Yes. Mm-hmm. We also have a lot of support and attention to children who are affected by the Ebola epidemic itself. Well, so there is a lot of support. And one of the things also, there is a lot of preparations now for post-Ebola activities. And those post-Ebola activities are geared towards mass information of the public, not to go back to the old practices that caused the health hazard. Remember, we are also not prepared for Ebola alone, but we are prepared for tropical diseases such as which have similar symptoms with Ebola. And in the beginning of Ebola itself, those were the two diseases that confused the public, malaria. And so the treatments are also available to the public as post-Ebola activities.
Yes, Jackson, Andrew there mentioned the post-Ebola activities. As somebody who just went there, did you notice anything that maybe, because many people agree that Ebola was spread by travel and those porous borders of those countries, you could move in and out. Mm-hmm. As somebody just getting in, was there some visible information, alerts to make sure that you...
When you walked into the airport, you have people who are taking your temperature. They have buckets where you wash your hands. They give you hand sanitizer. It's everywhere in the city. It's in the airport. Mm. It's at the restaurant where you're going. It was at a bar where I went. Mm. It was at a hotel. It's everywhere. There are visible signs that appear that the serious precautions are being taken. Mm. And just to talk a little bit about some of the post-Ebola, because the government has now entered a phase where they're dealing. Liberia is now has been declared Ebola free. Freetown, Sierra Leone is counting down. I think they have a little over or a little less than 20 days to be considered Ebola free. Fingers crossed if no new infections are found in the next couple of days. And they're very confident that they will be declared Ebola free. And so they have started instituting mass sensitization campaigns, including, you know, with the help of people like Andrew and his radio station, Sky FM, and other media entities. It is very clear they're not taking this lightly. They're very serious about it. They have international help. When I was in New York in July at the at the recovery conference that was convened by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. About $3 billion was pledged. And, you know, that money will go into activities like informing
people. How visible is the international NGOs and the international community there present?
You can tell that there's a presence. You can tell that there's a presence. And you know, I had the feeling that it would be kind of deserted. You wouldn't feel the presence of these international NGOs. But I was on the plane with people from CDC. Mm. I was on the plane with people from other smaller non-governmental medical agencies. I met with people from MSF. Mm. So I mean, this is not this is not something that they're looking at as just a West African issue. They understand how important it is that the whole world comes together to fight Ebola, that they all respond together. Otherwise, you know, given the porous borders in Guinea, given, you know, that air travel, we are basically like one world. And if you don't respond to this from the best way it is right now, there's a danger that it might spread to other parts of the world.
Andre, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, first of all, was the impact uniform in the whole country, or was it more in urban than rural communities?
Well, the impact was all over the country.
I see.
Everywhere, I could say 100%.
I see. Now let's move on to the issue of we talked about orphans, but let's talk about schools. Schools were disrupted for some time. Are they now back in full force? Are they what problems are they encountering, if any, or challenges?
The challenges are numerous. Most of them have lost their livelihood and would like to regain that, which is actually one of the big challenges, one of the challenges faced by the rural population, how they can regain their dignity in life, especially so when majority of those who are affected are illiterate. Mm-hmm. They are subsistence farmers. Most of them are not employed. They are self-employed. Mm. And you can tell how that affected their livelihood. That is the challenge, how to get those really affected, especially rural farmers. Mostly lost their farming season. Most of them lost their laborer jobs. Those kind of challenges are how can we get back to our agricultural system? Mm-hmm. How can we get back into having confidence in people, shaking hands? Strangers, visitors coming from far away, how are we dealing with those? But mostly it's how to rehabilitate those poor rural communities that were affected by Ebola, especially for farming.
I see. And how about we're talking about the role of the media in the whole in the Ebola thing. How are the media itself impacted? How are you impacted as media?
We have learned the lesson that we must be proactive whenever we have national issues like this. We cannot sit down and wait for support to come from either the government or the international community. I must actually commend all of our member radio stations for the independent radio network. The public can tell you that had it not been for their intervention, it would have been very difficult for health workers and the government to contain the Ebola epidemic. So we must give bravo to the media. Whatever role they play, it was to champion one single message coming from all of us, the same message spread throughout so that confidence can be built in the system. That is what we did so far.
I see. And were the people, your community, your audiences, were they selective in their media that they were receiving information from, like, say, international government media as opposed to private community radio stations?
We had a lot of coverage from people like you, VOA, BBC, who were, especially like VOA was leading the international broadcasters. I can tell you that. I know you guys have dedicated special hours for the Ebola. I was very impressed. Down on the ground itself, every radio station, every newspaper led the action, led the communication on the Ebola epidemic. So, yes, it impacted us. We have learned a lot of skills from our foreign counterparts. We have learned a lot of skills from the medical team. They have learned how to collaborate with the medical team when there is an epidemic. So in the near future, if we have such an epidemic, the media will be proactive as well as we did this time.
Finally, Andrew, briefly describe, tell us about as far as stigma is concerned. It's built of stigma, people fearing to do this and that. As you, as media, have you alleviated that issue? Because it helps a lot if people are not stigmatized.
Oh, yes. Media, the stigma has, there is still stigma, but it has been reduced because of the effects of media. We have to give examples of coexisting with Ebola survivors, and that has happened. We have a lot of posters around. We are mingling. We touch them. We live with them. The only thing is sex after survivor. There is a limited time for survivors to have sex because of a fear of transmitting the disease. So that's the stigma that's now left.
Mm-hmm.
Their sex lives have been tabled. You cannot have sex until, I think it's after 90 days.
I see.
And now we are pushing it to 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that is how safe we are trying to get a community.
Yeah, Jackson, the last 20 seconds.
I would say that the media could play a bigger role in kind of demystifying some of the issues here on Ebola, as they enter this post Ebola phase. There are so many people who survived, thousands of people who survived Ebola, but still have not yet been fully reintegrated into the community because there's this fear amongst the people about the people who survived, and so that stigma. I think Andrew and his people and his friends should actually work harder to kind of help people understand how important it is that these are critical members of society that need to be embraced instead of.
I think we'll keep on this story and we applaud the role of the media. That's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleague Jackson Mvunganyi, host of VOA's Upfront program, and Andrew Koroma, an award-winning journalist and director of Sky FM in Freetown, Sierra Leone. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the program.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
You're welcome. Our engineer tonight was Peter Hanley, and we'll be back again next week for another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you miss any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in tonight. I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.